Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyCars.ie. Low-cost car insurance specialists. See how much you can save at InsureMyCars.ie.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan, and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Well, in just a moment, we're going to be talking World Championship snooker with the very own Ken Doherty, talking to the listeners about what an amazing week it's been in the snooker. The four semi-finalists, well, if anybody had to pick the four of them to be the semi-finalists and put a bet on it, they'd be a multimillionaire at this stage, because it was some shock results, no question about it. But great to see some new faces in that semi-final stages.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of hype, of course, about Ronnie O'Sullivan, you know, going for the eighth World Championship and trying to, you know, overtake Stephen Hendry, both of them on seven. A lot of talk about Trump and Allen, John Higgins, Mark Williams, and they all went out. They all fell by the wayside. We have three qualifiers in the semi-finals. It's unprecedented, actually. It's not since 1977 when we had three qualifiers in the semi-finals, but there was only eight seeds then, and it was only started from last 16. So, yes, it's unprecedented. We have a former winner, who's Stuart Bingham, in the semi-final. He's locked 8-all with Jack Jones, and Corin Wilson was in control in the other semi-final. He's 14-10 up against Dave Gilbert now. Yeah, but lots of shocks, lots of surprise, lots of drama, and possibility of a new name on the cup.
Yeah, and Jack Jones, I watched the first few frames that he was playing, a little bit nervous, to be understood, I suppose, yeah, considering the enormity of where he finds himself, and it's a big task ahead of him. But you know, fighting back, not allowing it to get beyond him. So as you said, like, intriguing the way he's performing.
Yeah, he has. He's performed really well. He went 3-0 down yesterday, and then, as you said, he looked very, very nervous, which is understandable. It's the first time he's played in the one table setup here at Crucible. But the match is over 3 days, you know, 4-17. He came back really well and actually went ahead in the end. But Bingham won the last frame there yesterday to draw a level at 8-all. I just think he's being so cool. You know, he absolutely destroyed Judd Trump. He's had an amazing season this year, winning five ranking tournaments. Jack Jones absolutely destroyed him in the quarterfinals. And he's played really well. He's looked very, very cool. Unflappable, almost. And I think he's definitely value for, you know, he's putting it right up to the former champion.
Yeah, absolutely. Corin Wilson, we've spoken about him before. I mean, he was in the final there about 3 or 4 years ago, was it? Or maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And he's reaching semi-finals of big tournaments. Yeah, but he's, like, there's never been a better chance for him. There's no doubt about that. This is the golden opportunity for him to get the job done and win a world title. But like I said, he's been knocking on the door for a long time. Is this going to be his year?
Possibly. I mean, he's played really, really well. Knocked out John Higgins in the last round. He surged ahead now in this semi-final. It was locked at 8-all, but, you know, he's won 6-2 in the second last night. And, yeah, the last time he got to the final, of course, it was 2019. Ronnie O'Sullivan beaten well in the final. But this year, he's not going to be up against Ronnie O'Sullivan should he get there. I mean, he should do now. He needs three frames. He'll be playing, as I said, Bingham or Jack Jones. So it's a wonderful opportunity. But I think of the four players in the semi-final, he's probably playing the best. You know, he's the most consistent, great long putter, one of the best players with the rest. And like, he's a big scorer. You know, he knocks in the centuries, had a possible 147 in the first session, made 11 blacks and 11 reds. And, he looks the most sort of capable of the four players, I think, you know.
Yeah, and in the other one then, personally, I'd love to see Jack Jones getting through. I mean, I think it'd be amazing to see him get into that final. But Stuart Bingham just has that experience that might be able to call on when the going gets tough.
Yeah, I think so. I think that could be the difference in the end. Now, they've got to play two sessions. They start back out again at 10 o'clock this morning, play 8 frames, and then 9 frames in the evening session tonight. So experience might tell as they sort of get towards the line. You know, it's not only getting to the final of the World Championship and having the chance of winning that trophy, but also for both players. I mean, Jack Jones, before this event, was ranked number 44. Bingham ranked 32, I think. So, but both players, if they win this match and get to the final, they'll be back. They'll be in the top 16, which is another huge milestone, and saves them a lot of qualifying for next year. So it's a huge match for both players, and extra pressure on that as well.
Give us your pick. Come on, call it. Who do you think is going to be world champion?
I think Bingham is going to win. I think it's going to be Bingham Wilson final. But I think we're going to have another new name on the trophy. I'm going to go, I like Bingham, the way he plays. I think he's just a wonderful player. I'm going to go with Wilson. I just think he's had that sort of, that look, that eye of the tiger, Red, you know? And I think his name is on the trophy. He's destined to win it once, and I don't think he's going to get a better chance than this year.
Absolutely. Okay, well, it wouldn't be the World Snooker Championships if we weren't talking about Ronnie in some form, not getting that 8th title. But it's, you know, he's really starting to cement people's views. They either love him or hate him. And I've seen a lot of negative press this week about the way he tried to show up the referee in that final over the black spotting. And then also at the same time, the sportsmanship of not going for the pot. You know, he's just so hard to understand, the way he just keeps bringing, you know, black and white the whole time. You know, you just don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, it's very, he's a very controversial figure, you know, and he's had lots of run-ins with referees before. You know, they pulled him up off different things, hand gestures, etc., etc. He feels like referees sometimes have it in for him, but I don't think they do, you know, but if you're a referee, you wouldn't want to irritate Ronnie in any way, shape or form, you know, because it could blow up very, very easily. You know, he's on an edge all the time, and there's an electricity around him. You know, there's an electricity in the venue, the buzz around with the crowd, you know, and when they watch him, a bit like Alex Higgins, you know, he's very combustible. You know, you don't want to poke the bear, Red, you know, and I think if there's any sort of controversy or if there's anything wrong, I mean, you see some referees, they're respotting with it, you know, where like the pink may not go on a spot, so it has to go behind the pack. You go and sit down and wait until the referee finishes, you know. There's just sort of an edge all the time about him, but it was an act of sportsmanship, but also at the same time with the referee telling her to chill. Now I thought he was dead right in that situation, because there's people coming down the stairs, he's on a red into the green pocket. It was a very important time of the match and of the frame. It was 10-all at this stage, and he was dead right to take his time, but the referee was pushing him to play his shot. But I thought in that instance, I'd stand with Ronnie and say, no, he was correct, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, it's at the same time, though, Ken, he's his own worst enemy with all of this, because seems to, like, there's no doubt in my mind that those distractions cost him that game, because he just doesn't seem to be able to block all that stuff out, and it does get into his head and it affects his game. And he's spoken many times about mental health. He's spoken many times about the fact that he's pulled out of tournaments because of the pressure that he feels or different bits and pieces that's going on. That seems to be his biggest problem, let's call it, going forward. He just doesn't seem to be able to focus on the game and put all those things out of his head, and it's costing him titles. I mean, he's still an amazing player, don't get me wrong, but it is costing him titles.
Yeah, I mean, he does he struggles, even though he's won it 7 times. I mean, there's many times that, you know, he would say about the Crucible, about, you know, playing here, that he never liked it, you know. And it's too compact, it's too many people outside waiting, you know, he can't relax, you know, that way. And as you said, his mental health issues are well documented, his anxiety, you know, he's been on tablets, he's talking about that this week. But I thought this time around, that he was very bullish about what he's achieved and going on about his titles and what that he doesn't have to prove anything. And I thought he was sort of in a really good space mentally. But, you know, when it came down to the pressure, when it came down to the crux of the match, that Bingham stood up to him, you know. He didn't show any fear. He didn't show any intimidation. And in the end, Ronnie sort of cracked in the end.
Mm. Text in from one of our listeners, Ken, wanting to know what you've made of the standard of the tournament this year. If you look at it objectively, he's saying it's been a low standard. There's been only 52 century breaks so far, low since 2006, less than half the amount of recent years. And there's, in his opinion, only really been one good match, Higgins versus Allen. Selby and Trope and Ronnie didn't seem to show up. And the viewing figures, what are they like? That's from Ian in Dublin 7.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. But what I would say, Ian, is that there's a new batch of tables. The pockets have been cut a little bit different, which means they're a little bit tighter. And
can I ask, Ken, why did they do that? I mean, why you wouldn't change a pitch? You wouldn't change a rugby pitch, is it?
No, I think, well, I think in recent years that a lot of the players felt that the pockets were too big, you know, and particularly down the rail. And it was easy sort of making the game look a little bit too easy. And I think they've cut them a little bit different. And I think, actually, it's better, you know, because, okay, it's great to see centuries and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes when it's a little bit too easy down the rail, the players are just smashing reds in. Whereas now, you have to be a lot more accurate. And I think it's made the game a little bit better. There's been a few more misses and a lot closer games and stuff like that. But hence, less centuries, yeah. And I totally agree with a listener, you know.
Yeah, and then, you know, the other part is all of the pressure coming in from the financial side of things. There does seem, Ken, to be this push towards Saudi and China and more tournaments overseas and whatever they call it, sport washing or whatever. It does seem to be coming down the track. Are you concerned?
I'm concerned, yeah, very, very concerned. But what I would say is I'm very passionate about the Crucible, very passionate about Sheffield. I've been playing here since 1991, Reds. You know, I came here first in 1984 just to spectate. You know, it's our best venue. It's very, very special. It's got great history. It has a heritage, you know. And it's, I think, apart from making money, which the organisers want to make more money, they want to have more corporate facilities, more spectators, putting all that aside, means more to snooker, I think, having this event here, because it's a showcase for our snooker around the world, you know. Let Saudi, let China build their own heritage, build their own history. You cannot buy history. You cannot take this world championship from here and put it in Saudi. It would be the death of the game. This is our showcase event, and this sells snooker around the world, and this is what fans around the world come to see. This is our mecca, and should never, ever be sold.
Okay, well, it's going to be a battle, and there'll be many like yourself who are campaigning to keep it there, keeping the wolf from the door, for want of a better word, to take it away from Sheffield. But it's under pressure, and Sheffield has to react. The Crucible has to react. Yeah. They've got to provide facilities. They've got to change and move with the times, maybe some people might say, you know, and make it somewhere that is more appealing for the players and maybe can create more sponsors and maybe create more money around it, because at the end of the day, I suppose players feel that they have to make a living out of it, you know.
I think the players make a good enough living, Rich, you know. I think a lot of the other tournaments, yeah, there's going to be a lot more tournaments. It's going to be over 20 million on prize money, you know. They're making fortunes, the top players, you know. Yeah. It's just maybe the guys down the bottom of the list that aren't, you know. But maybe we can do something about it, but I don't think it should ever mill from the Crucible. That's just my own personal thing.
Excellent stuff. All right. Well, Ken, as always, great chatting to you. You'll be watching the rugby later on. It's shouting for Leinster, you will?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It should be a cracker. Okay. Can't wait. I'll have it on the commentary box, but don't tell anybody.
All right, fair play. All right, look, Ken, we'll look forward to seeing your socks over the weekend and what ones you're wearing. And keep up the good work. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Okay, take care, Ed.
Take care. That's the one and only Ken Doherty. and of course his wonderful socks that he's showcasing every week on the snooker, on the television and the BBC as we're watching, that he feels could be Kieran Wilson's year. So it'll be interesting to see. It could be a Bingham Wilson final and Wilson to take the title. But now it's time to turn our attention to a huge weekend of rugby for Leinster fans as we look at the Champions Cup semi-final, and delighted to be joined on the line by former South African South half, scrum half should I say, and of course coach within the Irish and Leinster system for a long time, Dan Van Zyl. Good morning, Dan, how are you?
Good morning, Rach. Good on yourself?
I'm very well indeed, thanks, Dan. Looking forward to a great weekend of rugby. We've been building up for this one for a while. I mean, Leinster putting out a fantastic performance against La Rochelle in the quarterfinal, eclipsing most people's predictions with a 40 points to 13 win. But now it's a totally new day and everything is back to down to this semi-final clash against Northampton. They haven't really had that many games. There's been a two-week tour to South Africa in between that hasn't gone great from a Leinster perspective, although they would have been resting some of their frontline players. But it's all about today. But these players haven't played for a few weeks, some of them. So are you any way concerned that they might be rusty going into this one against Northampton?
Look, I think that's always the concern with Leinster. You know, the way they've picked the teams in the latter parts of the competitions, previously obviously got through to the final and lost the last two finals. So it could be a bit of concern in the sense of it's always been said, are they battled hardened for those games, or is the rest in favor of the players? So I guess we'll know that answer this afternoon, but my view is that it was the right decision to rest the players, you know, and I think Leinster will come out on top today.
Yeah, a couple of injuries, Ringrose and Hugo Keenan still injured, but good solid replacements there. Kieran Frawley filling in there at full back, Jamie Osborne coming in that centre combination. It is a strong Leinster team that's been picked.
Yes, no, I think Slytherin being missing for Northampton is probably, it's going to hurt them more than Leinster's depth. You know, I think, as you rightly said there, Frawley has done very well in whatever position he plays. I still think he should be the 10, but he's a very good 15. So I don't think those two injuries, you know, will have such an influence on Leinster as what Slytherin and Ludlam will have for the Saints today.
The Saints, a lot's been said about the fact that, you know, obviously we've got Courtney Laws there, very, very experienced and captain of the team. But they are a young squad and they're achieving good things. But a lot has been made of the fact that they are a young squad and maybe coming to Croke Park, 82,500 people. A lot of them will have never experienced anything like this. You know, is there a danger that they might be overwhelmed by the whole situation, or do you think that they have the advantage of being able to just go out, young players, and not giving a damn and just going for it?
I think they actually will embrace it, you know, and I'm lucky to have still working with Eamon Ireland, who's a Irish lad from Kildara who runs our S&C department within Rugby Academy Ireland as well, but he's the Northampton's head of S&C. And he did a presentation on the whole history of Croke Park and what it means to the Irish people and everything earlier in the week. So I think Northampton will embrace it. And I think, as you rightly said there, the youngsters will come. And look, it's nothing to lose. Leinster are favourites and favourites by quite a margin. So I think they'll come out and play. They're a very good attacking side. You know, and that for me in the competition, the four best attacking sides are probably in the semi-final. So they're coming up against a great defence in Leinster. But I think they'll challenge Leinster in certain parts, especially early on.
What parts? I mean, if you're a Northampton coach and you're trying to dissect this Leinster team and work out a way to unpick the lock, what would you be recommending? Where do they have to go after them?
Look, they've got a lot of different line runners, you know, and their change of angles and so on has been very effective for them in the Premiership, wingers coming off their line and so on. Leinster's defensive system under Jacques is obviously go and chase. You know, they're not too worried about connections, but they just want to get off the line and go and make the tackle. So I would expect a lot of small runners off shoulders, you know, maybe a couple of switch lines. And I think they'll go into the wider channels, you know, testing Lama and Lowe in their defensive efforts. And obviously Frawley as fullback there as well, you know, that see how those connections work. So I think they, if they're going to beat Leinster, they have to do it with the back line. I don't think their pack is good enough to stand up to Leinster, especially for the 80 minutes. So I expect Northampton to go from side to side and use runners off shoulders in the midfield, trying to dislodge that blitz defence with a chaser coming out of the line.
A look at the bench as well. I think that's going to be a huge factor in the game. Ronan Kelleher, Keane Healy, Jason Jenkins, Conan, Jimmy O'Brien. There's some serious names there on that bench that can come on and make an impact. That'll be a big plus for Leinster as well, having as strong a bench to bring on.
Yes, and that's again, you know, I do think their bench is a lot stronger than the Northampton one. Northampton will try and stay in the game for as long as they can, but you know, I can't see them sustaining it. Although Finn Smith, the young fly-off, he's being mentioned in the same vein as what a Johnny Wilkinson was. You know, he can tackle, he can pass, he can run. He's got 200 points in 22 games for Northampton this year. So a lot relies on his shoulders. He's only 21. But, you know, they've got some firepower in the backs, but Leinster's pack and Leinster's bench, I think the last 20 minutes, I think that's where Leinster will pull away.
You mentioned the fact that you'd like to see Frawley playing it out half, and I understand that's the sentiments of a lot of Leinster supporters, and I myself see Frawley as a good 10 as well. But, I mean, Ross Byrne is playing there, and you know, I said this before, I just always feel that Ross has kind of overlooked, maybe the wrong word, but I mean, they're always looking to put somebody else in there, yet he's never really done anything wrong, he certainly hasn't really. I mean, you know, he controlled things in the quarter final, he controls things at various stages over his career when Johnny Sexton was still there, never really got the opportunity because Johnny Sexton was there. Now he's getting his opportunity and he's taking it, and yet there's still people talking about him, somebody else going into that 10 position. It's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, and unfair, I feel, on Ross Byrne at times.
You're right. But I think it's what you see in a fly-off as a person. You know, Ross, how many games has he played? 150 plus, probably, you know. And he's never let them down. Quarter final, he was outstanding. You know, he is the driving force in that team. He controls it and so on. It's probably just the running aspect. But then again, you know, if you have 14 other guys that are running onto the ball, you probably don't need a fly-off that does that, you know. So
Johnny Sexton, in fairness, ever play that running game at a Carter level, let's say, or an Entomac level, or Freddie Michalak back in the day level? He never really played it at that style. And I mean, Johnny Wilkinson and these guys, they were distributors. They were, controlling the game. They were kicking at right times. So, you know, us have never been that running out half, and they never seem to get that kind of pressure.
Yeah, no, look, and again, but, you know, and South Africa probably in that same vein with Pollard rather than Lubbock and so on, you know. So at the end of competitions and so on, you want that controlling factor, you know. Probably early doors when you chase bonus points, that's when you're looking for the running fly-off and so on. But Sexton Darcy, O'Driscoll, they made that famous Sexton loop be very effective and so on in the past. But that is really the only weakness that I see in Ross Byrne's game. You know, he's a guy of stature. You know, he's a tall guy with presence. He controls the game really well. Defensively, there could be questions asked, but he's never been found out in that department. So I'm very confident in him. And you want your best players on the park. So Leinster did it back in the day with Joe Carberry as well. You know, when they played him at fullback, they won those two playmakers in the team. So no, you know, I agree with you with Ross. He's obviously going to have challenges from his brother and Prendergast in the next couple of years, but he's had a great season even up to now, and look, he's still young.
Absolutely. Okay, well, it's going to be a cracker. I'm really looking forward to it. We're going along later on to be a part of it. I think it's a little bit of history as well, the whole Croke Park effect. I remember being there in 09 and the other wonderful games that there's been in Croke Park, and they were history. So bringing the family along to that one today, looking forward to it. The other big game, of course, is Toulouse taking on Harlequins in the other semi-final tomorrow. Toulouse, my second favourite team in the world, five-time champions. They're red-hot favourites for this one against Harlequins. But, you know, Harlequins were big-time underdogs in that quarter-final as well, and they got the job done. Do you think there's any chance that they can take out Toulouse?
No.
Okay.
No, I agree. You know, Leinster's been in seven finals. Toulouse has been in six finals. They've won five. That's who everybody wants to see in the final. And again, similar to that, everybody goes on about Toulouse's backline, and obviously the Pont makes a massive difference in the Pont and Ntamack. But it's the Toulouse forwards that I think where Quins will struggle today. Quins actually have got the exciting backline themselves. But I think the power game of Toulouse early doors will create the space for their backs, as what showed in the quarterfinals, you know, when they were 19-17 up and then within 12 minutes, 45-19, game over against Exeter, who I think will have a better defensive record than Quins. But Quins will give it a shot. They've never been there, you know, so they'll probably rise to the occasion, hopefully, and hopefully we have two good games, but my money is on Toulouse Leinster in the final.
Okay, well, I look forward to that. I have to, before I let you go, make reference to what was pretty impressive achievement by Munster on their recent tour down to South Africa, getting wins down there against the odds, you'd have to say, against two full strength teams. Were you surprised?
No. You know, I think previously when we chatted, it was about that Bulls Munster game, you know, and we both said it's two teams, full guns blazing, full deck of cards and so on, and Munster came on top. So and that's why Munster has used this tour as to get battled hard and for the finals, and they on the tour and so on. So slightly different mindset, but I think they're in a good place now again, you know, and that tour, you've been on tours more than the results, but that bring guys closer together and you get to know people better and so on. So it doesn't surprise me. I think the Bulls were surprised, you know, after they sending a B team to Northampton. They really targeted that game and then came second. So more questions to be asked for them than for Munster.
Yeah, okay. Well, it was a pretty impressive performance, I have to say, and one I thought... I won't say surprise, but I would say to get the both victories in my eyes down there on tour, travelling away at the end of the season, a hell of a performance, it really was. And it puts them right back in the running in that URC in terms of being favourites to lift the title again. So we'll see which way that one goes. Before I let you go, Dan, just your director, of course, in the Rugby Academy Ireland, how's everything going?
Look, we're now recruiting again for the new income. We finished there last Friday with this year's group, and now recruiting starting in mid-August. We've got summer camps and so on, so still busy times, but going well, thanks, Rich.
Excellent. Well, it's a wonderful setup. I've been down there a few times myself to see what you've got going on. So for any rugby people interested in getting a little bit more advancement for their kids, it's worth having a look at Rugby Academy Ireland and checking that out. Dan, as always, pleasure to talk to you, and we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Thanks a lot, Reggie. Always a pleasure.
Now it's time to turn our attention to GAA in what is another busy week as the championship comes to being wrapped up. Delighted to be joined on the line by Brian Talty, who's making the effort on it from a train on the way to Galway at the moment, but still taking the time to talk to us. Good morning, Brian, and thanks for taking the time.
Not a bother, Reggie. Hope it's not too noisy here.
No, it's perfect. It's great. I can hear you perfectly at the moment. Also, I have Sean Lane in studio here with me. Sean, busy weekend, no question about it, and football to start, I suppose. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely, Reggie. Two provincial championships, and good morning to you, Brian. How are you doing?
How are you doing, Sean?
I remember when you were playing, Brian, even if it was 80,000 in the stadium or 70,000, we could still hear you out in the middle of the pitch. So I don't think we'd have too much problem getting through today. But again, thanks for the effort. I suppose I'll start with an easy one. Kerry and Clare. Firstly, Jack O'Connor beating Cork. Cork performed reasonably well, but Kerry got home. I'd say if you were talking to Clare before the draw was made and said you've only to beat Waterford in a semi final of the Munster Championship to get to the Munster final, they'd have said there's something wrong with that. There's only one winner here, Brian, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I suppose Kerry's performances have been patchy enough all through the league, and particularly in the game against Cork. And as you say, I thought Cork put up a huge performance there, and I think we kind of flagged that as well, that could happen, you know. But the same questions are there about Kerry, and they're not going to be tested today, Sean. But, I mean, Foley is back at full back, which is good for them because it was a bit of a doubt there about their full back line. Middle of the field, you know, has to be tested as well yet, and the reliance on O'Shea and Clifford up front. So won't be tested today, but certainly, hopefully, Clare are going to put on a huge performance. Like Mark Fitzgerald is a Kerry man. He's taken over from Colm Collins down there, who did a massive job with Clare. A lot of very proud people in Clare, football people as well as hurlers, Sean, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, and you know, in Division 3, they were unlucky that they didn't get through to Division 2. I think the refereeing decision against Westmeath kind of put them out of it. But, yeah, Mark is doing great work down there, and there's a lot of really good footballers. But his problem this year, he's lost 5 players, really good players as well. So, you know, they'd be hoping to put on a bit of a performance. And look at the score last year was something like, I think it was 14 to 15 points or something like that. So they'll be just hoping to get their best side out and maybe get a better score up than that from last year. But, you know, as you said, there's only one winner in it, Kerry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, and we'll talk about this at the end of the section, but, you know, to play, you know, 7 Division 3 games and then play Waterford in the semi-final of a Munster Championship, it doesn't give even a really good chance to prepare to take on Kerry.
Yeah, absolutely not, you know. But Sean, that's been going on for, I suppose, 100 years now at this stage, you know what I mean? Like, there was no huge challenge in Munster at all, like, except Kerry, Cork was the big one. Clare came every now and again. Limerick had a few years back had a good enough team as well, you know. But no, there hasn't been a big challenge, and I suppose that's what you'll discuss later on as regards the provincial championships. It's a pity there aren't challenges down there, but, you know, that's the way it is. The way it has been, so maybe it needs to be tweaked and maybe it needs to be changed, but that's a discussion for later.
We'll have a chat about that at the end. And I suppose that really the big one, Brian, from your own perspective, the Connacht final, you've played in many of them, and I think from my statistics here, you've won 6 of them, so you know what it's like. But equally, this Galway team, they're playing their 9th Connacht final in a row. They've won 4 and lost 4, but they're also going for 3 in a row, something that your own team did back in the 80s. 82, 3 and 4. How will this go?
To be honest with you, you know, I think, you know, when you mentioned the provincial, you know, having 6 provincial championship medals is a proud thing as well, and they were hard won back in the old days as well, but and that's another discussion, as you say, as regards the provincial championships. But Galway Mayo, this is a huge one. Like, it's always a huge one in Connacht, to be honest with you, and we're all looking forward to it, as you can hear on the train, getting ready for it, you know. There's a bit of a buzz on the train as well.
He must be a Mayo man. He's trying to interrupt you, Brian.
Well, things never change, you know what I mean, but how would it go, Sean, is the big thing. I look, the way it is at the moment, I think Mayo are playing better football. Not huge, excellent football or anything like that, but they're playing better football. Their form is better than Galway at the minute. Galway are really struggling to get that form there. But, you know, the big plus for us today is that Damien Comer is back, Shane Walsh is back, Liam Silk is back, and Sean Kelly is back. So hopefully they get that bit of performance today, because, look, at every Galway man is hugely motivated to beat Mayo. and likewise, you know, so anything can happen in the Mayo-Galway game. So I'm hoping Galway are going to take it, but I have a fear that Mayo are going that little bit better.
Yeah, and I suppose you made a very good point during this campaign where you were saying that, look at Galway with all these injuries, but when they get them back, they mightn't have the recommended kind of game time under their belt. And Damien Comer, surely, if he's on form, which I very much doubt, but if he is on form, he's a huge threat to the Mayo full back line.
Comer is just an unusual player, to be honest with you. He's a real old style full forward. The ball in there, he can win the ball. You know, he's the point of attack, and he can change the way the forwards are playing because he'd win the ball. He can give it off to the likes of Finnerty and Shane Walsh and these guys. He's just an unbelievable player, and he's one of those players who can, Sean, come back, get into the game and play the way he normally plays, because there's no flash or anything about it. It's all about winning the ball, and he can take scores as well, which is unbelievable. And he did change the game against Sligo, Sean.
He did, yeah, and got a great score. Yeah,
he made the difference when he came on. He set up the goal as well, so that's huge for Galway. I'm just hoping that with him there, they've picked an unusual half forward line in the sense they have three midfielders in the half forward line. So I'm saying to myself, tactically, are they going to crowd the middle of the field, leave space for Walsh and Comer inside and Finnerty? Maybe that won't work, but that looks what it's going to be like. But Comer, huge plus, and hopefully Shani Walsh is going to come back to form as well on the right day.
Yeah. Look, last question, Brian, and we'll try and do it quickly. Just looking at crowds and, you know, everybody you talk to giving out about the structures of the provincial championships and the draws and who gets who, and if you win the Connacht Championship, you end up in a tougher draw than if you lose it and all of that. What's your own view on the provincial championships and the way we run off the championship after that?
Well, the way I'm looking at it, Sean, you know, everybody's complaining and giving out about this, that and the other. You know, I mean, this is the trial the GAA are doing. Like, they're trialing this. And in fairness to them, they did change the system. Like, as you know, the old system, Sean, when I played, or and maybe you played after that, you trained like mad, you played the league, you might play one game in the championship, and that was it. You could be gone if you lost the game. I think it's great that they're trialing this, and hopefully it'll work. Now, I do think the provincials are in trouble, to be honest with you. And if they don't have a connect, if there isn't a connect between the provincial championship and the Sam Maguire, well, then it's going to die a death. It's going to be like the Railway Cup, Sean. It'll go on for a few years and then it'll die a death. There has to be a connect. But look, I have to say, in fairness, they're trying the system. They will tweak it after the trial time, and people should give it time and see how it goes.
And Brian, with all that noise in the background, ever the professional, you managed to get through that. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us this morning and giving us that great insight into everything that's going on in the football. We'll let you get back and maybe you can get a cup of tea off the trolley and relax now for the rest of the journey.
He's definitely a Mayo man.
Definitely. Always interrupting, no doubt about it. All right, thanks very much.
All right, lads, thanks a lot.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend and a safe trip down to Galway. Yeah. Did great there, Brian, Sean, considering the interruptions in the background, but we got through it all and some great insight into that as well. But there's a whole lot going on as well in the hurling this weekend, and last week threw up some really interesting encounters. But for this week, of course, in Leinster, Wexford under pressure, it has to be said, after defeat to Antrim. Galway coming this afternoon, and they'll need to improve, Wexford, if they're going to get a result.
Oh, absolutely, Reggie. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, with 10 minutes to go in both games, two Wexford games, one against Dublin and one against Antrim, they were ahead. With Dublin, they were 5 points clear. Dublin can score two good goals. Above in Antrim and Corrigan Park last week, they had played very, very poorly, but still found themselves a couple of points up. And Reggie, would you believe they conceded two more goals and lost that game? I had a look at, you know, the reason this happens. And obviously, two reasons, I think. Obviously, one at each end. I looked at their scores. They've scored 121 against Dublin and they scored 220 against Antrim. But Lee Chin has scored 112 and 211. Lee Chin has scored 323. So he's actually got the three goals and he's got over 50% of their scores. Other forwards are going to have to chip in more. Now, I'm a small bit unfair to Rory O'Connor because he did get four really good points against Dublin. That's certainly one point part of the game that they'll have to improve in. They'll certainly have to, if they get themselves or find themselves in front, they'll have to pack the defence a little bit more. I mean, even the goals against Dublin, the very last goal, the ball just broke in the square and there were two Dublin lads going for the breaking ball and Keane O'Sullivan got at the end of it. So they'll definitely have to look at that. But this is a huge game for Wexford, Reggie. They'll look at the table. Dublin play Antrim next week in Parnell Park. If Dublin win that, Wexford have to beat Galway or they have to beat Kilkenny. They have Galway at home. When they get as far as Kilkenny, Kilkenny probably will have all their good players back, Owen Cody, Adrian Mullen and Owen Murphy in goal. So this is a do or die as far as they're concerned. They're going to have to work on the assumption that that Dublin will beat Antrim in Parnell Park and that'll be close. But, you know, there's an awful lot of good work done in Wexford, drawn three Division 1 league games. But you know, you have to be able to bring it to Championship. So a huge game for Wexford. On the other side, I thought it was a great game of hurling the last day between Galway and Kilkenny. I thought Henry Shefflin, his interview afterwards, I don't think he was happy. I thought he was relieved. I presume all the talk was that Kilkenny would be missing all these players. But you know, the couple of good things that certainly Henry has unearthed, he's unearthed two really good players in Keenan Fahey from Ardrahan and Gavin Lee from Clarenbridge. Gavin Lee in particular playing in the middle of the park. He's 2 goals and 4 points scored in the championships. So that's a big plus. I think they've, you know, a really, really good full forward line. Conor Cooney, Cathal Mannion, who got 4 points, Kilkenny, and also Conor Whelan, who's captain, got 3 more from the Kinvara club. He doesn't have his half forward line right. The one thing he will worry about, Henry, Reggie, was he'd 14 wides the last day. I had a look at his stats. He, you know, 39 shots. So he actually had just over 60% efficiency. That might win you or draw you a championship match, Reggie, but I tell you, you won't win a championship, a Leinster championship or an All-Ireland with those statistics. So he'll need to improve. He did, however, changed the free take, and he brought Evan Nyland on the last day, who scored 6 frees, so he's starting him this day. And a very interesting call, he's Garrod McInerney, picked at wing back. Now I suspect he may stick him back in at full back and play a sweeper in front of Lee Chin if Lee Chin is putting up all of these scores. But I'm actually expecting an absolute cracker. And the Galway half forward line, Tom Monaghan, Evan Nyland and Brian Concannon, all fast, all great stick workers, all accurate. But, you know, is it the right combination to win their own puck outs? I'm not too sure on that, Reggie. I'm going to go with Galway in this one. I just think they'll have enough firepower for Wexford. And, you know, they'll probably have a strategy where they'll try and cut down Lee Chin. But really looking forward to that this afternoon. That's at 4 o'clock.
Excellent stuff. A huge game in Munster. Tipperary, probably disappointing is the word you'd use against Limerick. But they're taking on Waterford, who were the opposite of disappointing, a great win over Cork. How are you going to go on that one?
Yeah, I think you're right. Firstly, you know, we all have our thoughts on Davey, but let's be absolutely clear here and acknowledge that man got it right the last day against Cork. He had them fired up. The one thing, and if you just compare to what I said about Wexford a few minutes ago, in the win against Cork, Desi Hutchinson was taking the frees and he got 10 points, but out of 225, you know, Jamie Barron got 1-3, Stephen Bennett got another 1-3, Callum Lyons got 3 points. Everybody's ticking over the scoreboard there from a Waterford point of view. This is going to be a huge game. If my maths are right and the rules and regulations are right, if Davy wins this, they're 4 points out of four. Tip or not out of four, and Cork or not out of four. I don't think either of them can catch him because they both have to play one another. So Davy has a different agenda to build it up. That lads, if you can beat Tipperary at home, here you're going to come out of Munster, and who would have seen that coming, Reggie? I certainly wouldn't have in the early days. On the other side, if you listen to poor Liam Cahill after the match, I mean, you know, good managers are bad managers. The one thing about good managers is they do have bad runs, and I just think Liam Cahill is having one of them. If you take their last league semi-final against Clare, they just couldn't put the ball over the bar from frees and anywhere. After 15 minutes, I'm not saying the game was over against Limerick, Reggie, but I can tell you one thing. I'd say anybody that was at it and anybody who was watching it on TV worked out fairly quickly that Tip weren't going to win this game. They were very poor by their own standards. I just thought then, you know, when they were really in trouble bringing on Noel McGrath and Bonner Maher, two of the greatest probably Tipperary hurlers there's been over the last 10 or 12 years, it kind of said a lot that they didn't have an awful lot in reserve in thing. Now, having said that, I watched the under 20 game last night and Tipperary gave Cork a good hiding in that, so that there are players and there are always players coming. But I actually don't see any winner other than Waterford, Reggie, in this game. And that's at, I think that's at 6 o'clock this evening as well.
Excellent stuff. Okay, no doubt there'll be plenty of Desi Fitz antics for us to look at as well. What else is happening around the capital?
We've a lot, Reggie, and firstly, just let me say from the ladies' point of view, I didn't cover them this morning, and the reason for it, Dublin and Mead play tomorrow in Parnell Park. Mead are throwing out a second string team, and the reason for that, Reggie, is both teams are in the Leinster final the following Sunday in a doubleheader, so we will certainly cover the ladies' football next week. From the Dublin Minor Hurlers, I'll be at this tomorrow. They're playing Kilkenny and Nolan Park at 2 o'clock, so we're looking for all of support there. Our under 20 team, Shane O'Brien's team, they're out Wednesday night against Wexford in Parnell Park in a knockout game quarter final, so any support we can get to try and get it over to that. The minor footballers, Reggie, had a great win, a very comprehensive win in Parnell Park during the week to Wexford, but they go away on Tuesday night at 7:30 down in Kildare in the semi-final of the Leinster. And hats off to the Dublin Camogie team who won the National League, but they're out in Peregrines this afternoon at 3 o'clock where they take on Meath in the first round of the Leinster Championship. And let's not forget, they were level with Kilkenny in last year's Leinster final with only a minute to go, and just Kilkenny with the experience got over the line. So there's an awful lot going on in the capital, and I suppose everybody really wants to get as much support as they can. And just one last thing, Reggie, and very quickly, just from Dublin's Talking Sport and all the hurling people here in Dublin, to wish Peter Casey of Limerick a speedy recovery. And it was a horrific injury he received in the Tipperary game.
Absolutely, we echo that sentiment. Sean, as always, thank you for that wonderful roundup on the hurling, and also to Brian Talty, who made the effort to talk to us from that train to Galway and got over all interruptions to that. And plenty happening last night in the League of Ireland as well, and to join me on the line now to talk about that is, of course, the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Alan, how are you?
I'm good, Reggie, yourself?
Never better, yeah. Looking forward to a great weekend. Huge day, of course, in Croke Park. And the snooker, I know you love. Plenty happening in that as well. But last night was certainly busy. But I tell you what, this league this year is just, it's the most bizarre league, because there's opportunities there for people to take it by the scruff of the neck, and no one seems to want to. I'm looking at the results from last night. I'm looking at three draws in crucial matches where you wouldn't have expected there to be draws, let's say. Shelburne being the first one. Let's talk about that. Away to Dundalk. Dundalk bottom of the table, and it's a nil-all draw. What's going on at Shelburne?
Yeah, it's very competitive, all right, Reggie. The league, to be fair, and as you say, trying to predict the results is, it's a minefield at the weekends, it really is, because it's so difficult. I was in Dalymount last night, and again, like, you're looking at that thinking the form team, Shamrock Rovers, although both have been in decent form themselves, but again, the favourites, you would fancy them. But it was an evenly contested match. Bohemians will be kicking themselves, because they should have been definitely ahead at half time by not just one, but I think actually two goals. Piszczek, who actually scored the goal, missed a brilliant header, a great chance before that. And then Dale Rooney had an unbelievable opportunity when the game was at 1-0 to go 2-0 up. Then Shamrock Rovers themselves equalised, so to be disappointed going in. And Shamrock Rovers took over the match really in the second half, Reggie. They were totally dominant without really creating any clear cut chances, but they were totally dominant. Bohemians were kind of hanging on in the end, but I think they'll be happy at a point, but they'll be definitely very disappointed with the first half and not taking those chances when they were well on top.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, Derry City as well, going away to Galway United and not getting the job done. Now, Galway, you know, certainly stronger than they were in the past, but Derry, with the strength that they have and the players that they have, you would have expected them to go and get that job done.
Yeah, and you mentioned here in the intro just about obviously teams that have the opportunity to grab it by the scruff of the neck, and Derry certainly are one of those that you would hope that they would grasp that opportunity. And going away to Galway, I always feel if you have aspirations to win the league, you should be beating the promoted teams. Now, to be fair, they're a stubborn team, Galway. They don't concede many goals. I think it's only 7 they've conceded. They're difficult to beat at home, and they've picked up the odd result here and there against the top teams as well. So they've actually done well since they've come up. But still, as I say, if you have aspirations to win that league, which Derry do, when you want to push on, and especially if you feel Shamrock Rovers have a difficult game against Bohemians, they might slip up, you have to take advantage. And that's something the same with Shelburne you mentioned there, obviously going away to Dundalk. Now, Dundalk got a bounce from, obviously, the new manager coming in last week, got a victory, again, a home game last night. So I think they played fairly okay again, but it would have been a tough nut to crack. But Shelburne's form in the first 7 matches, I think they won 6 out of the first 7, Reggie, and they were in unbelievable form, which got them the great start. Since then, it hasn't been quite as good. Now, they haven't lost many games, but they haven't won as many as the one in the first part as well. But they're still top. They would have been delighted with that at the start of the season, the position to find themselves in. But just, I suppose, to answer your point about teams just grabbing it by the scruff of the neck and giving themselves an advantage, because you always feel like Shamrock Rovers last night brought Jack Byrne off the bench and Neil Ferrugia. So their big players are coming back. And when the big players are back, like, it looks ominous for the rest of the teams when you think they're at the top already, even missing such key players that they're missing at the moment.
Yeah, I know. you know, the Shelburne results, 7 wins, 5 draws and 2 losses only, which is not bad, as you said, but those draws, so many of those could have been wins, and probably Shelburne fans would feel should have been wins, and Dundalk would be an example of that last night. And it's not being disrespectful to Dundalk, but they've only got 9 points and 1 win at the bottom of the table, and if you're Shelburne with the quality they have and ambitions of winning the title, you got to put those ones away.
Yeah, that's the key point, Reg, you know, but it's very competitive. As I said, it's so hard to call the fixtures every week, which leads me to believe like there's not much between the teams at all. And when you go to the games, this is what I'm seeing and this is what I'm finding, Reggie, to be fair, you know, that there isn't much between the teams. I still think Shamrock Rovers are the standout team and they're the ones that everybody has to beat. But certainly from second place down, there's not much between the teams at all. And that's obviously what we're seeing in the results. And that's why it's so competitive, which in one sense, it's good that it's competitive, but it would make you wonder just what the quality is like that's chasing Shamrock Rovers.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because it does make for a brilliant league because, as you say, you know, there's teams right down to Sligo in 8th place. They've 14 points. They've a game in hand on some of the ones that are the top. And in 3rd place is, 23 points, which Derry City with that other game. And then you're looking at 14, 16, 17, 18, 20, all the way up to Bowes in 4th place. I mean, there's nothing between 4th and 8th. One win can flip that on its head. And even between 4th and 1st, with games in hand, there's only 23 to 26 points. So the most competitive league we've seen in many, many a year and the most enjoyable league to follow, let's say.
Yeah, it is. It's very competitive, which is good, as you say. But just the worry I would have is that when Shamrock Rovers kick into gear, because even at the moment, like as I said, they have the amount of players to have injured. Dylan Watts even came off last night. Dara Burns came off. I'm not sure if they're long-term injuries, but they came off in the game. But you're bringing on Jack Byrne, Ferrugia. There was no Towell. There was no McAniff, Lee Gray, Sean Hoare. Like, they have an unbelievable squad. And even with those players missing, they're still up the top of the table. So it is competitive. It makes for good viewing for the neutral and for us, I suppose, Reggie. But I would just worry just a little bit just in terms of the quality that's chasing down Shamrock Rovers. Are they at that level? And okay. And that's no disrespect to them. Derry are the ones that have spent big. Shelburne not as much, but certainly Derry are the ones would have the big budget I would hope would be at that level. Shelburne are still very much building, and Damien Duff's done an unbelievable job to have them where he has so early in his stint, if you like. I never felt that they were going to challenge for a title this year, but the longer they find themselves at the top, they'll certainly feel as though they can. But I'm just talking about maybe people at the start of the season who you would be looking at potentially challenging Shamrock Rovers. Derry were certainly in that mix. Now, they're in the mix, obviously, but I just feel when Shamrock Rovers have their players back, get into the form that we know they're capable of. Because I just think they're just like, and what they've done the last couple of years, they're just keeping teams at arm's length, Reggie, and that seems to be enough, which shouldn't really be the case. They should be getting pushed all the way.
Okay, across the water, it's getting really getting tense now. Certainly, Arsenal, that one-pointed lead, but of course, a game more played than Manchester City, sitting in second place on 79 points. City, you have to feel, will get the job done. You'd hope Arsenal will against Bournemouth as well. Liverpool are out of it at this stage, you'd have to feel. So, title-wise, can Arsenal hang on? Will there be a slip-up somewhere for City?
I think if the slip-up is going to come, Reggie, I think it could come today because they're playing first at half 12. I think that's always an advantage to get your business done, heap another little bit of pressure on the team that follows you. And Man City are obviously playing a half 5 against Wolves. And I just feel Wolves are one of those teams that have had a great season. They've nothing to play for now. But I think their manager is very ambitious and very driven. And he'll relish the challenge to go up against Guardiola, Gary O'Neill, and just add another string to his bow because I think he's done a marvellous job since he's gone in at Wolves. Obviously, Man City will be big favourites, but just at this stage of the season, I just think there will be a twist somewhere, and I think today could be the day, especially if Arsenal get their business done in the half 12 kickoff. They've been unbelievable, Reggie. Nobody can be critical of Arsenal. I think I added up during the week their last 14 games, they've won 12, they drew against City, and they had that one bad half against Aston Villa. But Man City's last 18, I think they've won 14 and drawn 4. So it's just the standards that Man City have set. Arsenal would have won 2 or 3, 4 leagues in previous years with the points tally they're going to accumulate. But just because of what Man City and I suppose Liverpool have done in the last 2-3 years and just raised the standards so high that even that bad half against Aston Villa might cost them. And how can you be critical of that? I think Arsenal have been unbelievable all season, Reggie, just to be even hanging in, or not even hanging in, still very much in the mix with 3 games to go. They've been phenomenal, and you would hope there might be a little bit of a twist, and I think today could be the day if it's going to come.
You mentioned Aston Villa there. I know they're a good 13 points off the top of the table, but it has been a fantastic season if you're a Villa fan. They have to be very, very happy, very proud, and sitting in fourth place comfortably, it would seem, ahead of Spurs, who are 7 points behind them. Great season for Villa.
Unbelievable season, yeah. And again, a brilliant manager, Unai Emery. I thought he was disrespected when he came to England and was the manager of Arsenal, and they were even disrespecting the way he spoke. And obviously, he's not from England and he was trying to learn the language. And I just thought that, as I say, for such a brilliant manager, he was never treated with the respect that he deserved. And it was almost like he came to Villa with a point to prove. Everybody knew what he had done in terms of winning Europa Leagues and the brilliant job he had done in Spanish football. But as I said, it was almost like I never felt he had anything to prove, but it was almost because of the way he was treated, he felt he probably had to. And he's done that at Aston Villa. He's been phenomenal. I know they had the bad result in Europe during the week, but I think that's just down to an accumulation of the amount of games they've played. They might have just run out of steam. But certainly if he was to finish in the top 4 in the Champions League places, which it looks like they're going to do, it's been a phenomenal season for them.
Okay. I know you're a big fan. We're nearly out of time. Give me your prediction. Are you going for Kieran Wilson in the snooker?
He's looking very strong, isn't he, Reggie? But Bingham may be a tough nut to crack as well, and if that's the two in the final, and I think it will be Bingham and Wilson.
Okay, well, we'll see what way that goes. I'd like to see Wilson doing it, I have to say. If it's not going to be Jones, I think I'd like to see Wilson do it. Okay, Alan, as always, an absolute pleasure talking to you, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Enjoy the rugby, Reggie. See ya.
I'm looking forward to it. That's the one and only Alan Cawley there, giving us all of his thoughts and singing the praises of Arsenal, which I have to say it has been a great season as a supporter. Watching them, they've been going well, but it is going to be a very, very, very tight finish. There's no question about it. And I think we need some little slip up along the way if it's going to be an Arsenal title come the end of the season. We'll just have to wait and see.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.